Hare Krishna. On behalf of our most beloved founder, Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, I would like to invite you to participate every week in our Sunday festival and humbly welcome you today. Coming this week, we will be celebrating Janmashtami. The day that is particularly worshipped by all devotees in gratitude and joy, because it is on this day that Krishna appears within this material world in His original transcendental form. And He does so only once, an entire day of Lord Brahma, which is many billions of years. Krishna comes especially to speak words of eternal wisdom and to perform beautiful pastimes to attract our minds. Bhagavad Gita tells us without control of the mind, there is no question of yoga. Yoga is not simply performing breath control asanas or exercises, practicing rules and regulations of morality, cultivation of scriptural knowledge. The real purpose of yoga is to fix our mind on the Supreme. In real samadhi, in its perfected state, is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. To be absorbed in the Lord. In everything we do, everything we speak, everything we think. But according to Gita, there's one problem that the conditioned soul faces. That blocks the eternal, natural, blissful state of the soul. And that problem is the uncontrolled mind. Today, I would like to speak briefly on this subject of the grave importance of controlling the mind. What is the mind? How the mind is affected by material conditionings. Why the mind is affected by such things. And how to tune it in to the eternal, all-loving form of God. Krishna is the supreme attractor, Purusha. And the jiva, or every living entity, by nature, is to be attracted by Krishna. Therefore, we are Prakriti. Prabhupada used a simple example. When you turn to the sun, you see light. When you turn away from the sun, you see shadow. What is shadow? Shadow is the absence of the presence of the sun that is created by the sun. You cannot have a shadow without light. Krishna Surya Samaya Hoya Andhakar. Lord Chaitanya taught us in this way that Krishna is like the sun, eternally emanating light. When we turn to Krishna, we are always in that light. But when we turn away from Krishna, our consciousness succumbs to the darkness of the shadow of Maya. The material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the ego are declared to be apara prakriti, material nature, the inferior energy. But the jivatma, the spirit soul, is para prakriti. It is spiritual by nature. Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. We are the energy of the Lord. In fact, the Svetha Svapara Upanishad explains how everything that exists in both spiritual and material worlds are simply emanations of the Lord's energies. Parashya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate. The Lord has multifarious energies, but the scriptures summarize them as three. There is the Antaranga Shakti, or the internal superior potency of the Lord, also called Chit Shakti, the energy of perfect knowledge and consciousness, also called Swarup Shakti, the personal energy of the Lord. It's also called Atma Shakti, the Shakti of the Spirit, of the Eternal. And this Chit Shakti sustains eternally the entire spiritual world. This Antaranga Shakti enlightens all of us who turn in her direction toward pure loving service to the Supreme Lord. And the Chit Shakti has three features: Sandini, Samvit, and Fladini, or Satchit Ananda. The Sandini Shakti sustains the eternal existence of the spiritual worlds. Samvit sustains the cognizance or knowledge and awareness of our eternal identity in relation with the Lord and the Lord's relation with us. And Fladini Shakti, the essence of all the Lord's energies, is the energy that gives supreme unlimited pleasure to Krishna. And as the Srimad Bhagavatam second canto explains, when you put water on the root of a tree, automatically every part of the tree is nourished. When Krishna is pleased, we are pleased. When we connect with that Ladini Shakti to give pleasure to Krishna, we in return receive unlimited pleasure. That is the internal potency of the Lord. And then there is the Bahiranga Shakti, or Maya Shakti. The purpose of Maya Shakti is to separate the living entity's consciousness from the awareness of our relationship with God. The Gita explains, within the realm of this Bahiranga Shakti, there are 8 material elements. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the false ego. Krishna says these are my separated energies. Srila Prabhupada explains what it means by separated energies. It's actually the same energy, but Krishna is not directly controlling it. It is done indirectly. Srila Prabhupada said, just like I am speaking, that is direct. But when I speak in a tape recorder, and then you listen to that word in the tape recorder, he said, it is indirect, or it is a separated energy, but it is his energy. And the third energy is the Tathashta Shakti. The Tathashta Shakti, or the Paraprakriti, is qualitatively one with the superior internal energy of the Lord, because we are eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. The Tathashta Shakti is all living entities, the jiva soul. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Our nature is we are eternally part and parcel of Krishna. We are actually never separate from Krishna, and we are never identical in all respects to Krishna. We are qualitatively one with Krishna, we are of the same spiritual substance, but quantitatively he is infinite, we are infinitesimal. And the nature of being infinitesimal is the Tathashta Shakti is between the spiritual and material energies. And therefore, according to the free will of the living entity, we either come under the subordination of material or spiritual energies. Srila Prabhupada gives an example. If you go to the beach, there is the sand. Between the ocean and the land. But that sand is always either ocean or land. It's in between, it could be affected by either one, but it's always one or the other. When there's a high tide, it's no longer the beach, it's the sea, is it not? And when it's a low tide, it's not the sea, it's the beach. So which one is it? According to what particular subordination it is existing within. So the Jivatma, by our free will, we are either dependent on the spiritual energy or dependent on the material energy. But the living entity is never independent. Anandamayo Vyashat. Because we are part and parcel of Krishna, we have the same essential quality of Krishna. Krishna is always seeking pleasure. He is Rasbihari. In the spiritual realm, the Supreme Lord's only pastime is the ecstatic pleasures of love. That's all. Krishna expands himself in many other forms and through his various energies to do everything else. But Krishna is simply enjoying. He's not creating directly. Through Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Karunodakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, and then empowering Lord Brahma and various demigods, He's creating universes. But he has nothing directly to do with any of it. Although it's him. It's his expansions. Even when Krishna is killing the demons in Vrindavan, it is his Vasudev feature that is killing the demons. Not different than him, but in his full-fledged identity or personality of Godhead Krishna, he's simply Ras Bihari. He's simply playing, enjoying the sweetest pleasures of love. That is God's eternal lila to enjoy. And we are part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, pleasure is the inseparable nature of the soul, to seek pleasure. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained that when one develops a spirit of independence, then that paraprakriti, the eternal spirit soul, spiritual energy, is forced to enter into the material world. And when we come under the material world, we come under the subjugation of the Bahiranga Shakti, or Maya. When the spirit soul becomes dependent on Maya, Bhagavad Gita explains what is the experience. Dukalaya mashashvatam. Simply so much suffering. Because everything is eternal that we are longing for. But in this world, nothing is eternal. Everything is temporary. Therefore, the pleasures of this world are actually painful if we just look into the future. Because they will be stripped away from us. Birth, old age, disease, and death, the threefold miseries, miseries of the body, mind, miseries caused by other living entities and by natural forces, are imminent upon everybody at all times within this material world. That is the nature of this place. But when the jiva soul takes shelter of the chitshakti, the spiritual potency of the Lord, then rasovaisaha, simply bliss that cannot be disturbed by any situation. That is our real home. Back home, back to Godhead, although it sounds very simple, it is the only goal of life for everyone to return to our natural position. How does Maya delude us in this way? Srila Prabhupada explains, Maya simply creates a cloud. A cloud that does not allow us to see the sun, the light of our true identity. Well, Srila Prabhupada gives another example, like a dense fog. When a pedestrian is walking through fog, we can't see the sun. Everything is dark, and we really don't know where we're going. Here in India, in the winter time, in Delhi, sometimes with all our technology, even international aircrafts coming from Germany, America, and Britain, they can't land because of the fog. They can't take off because of the fog. When fog is thick, you just can't see. You're trapped. Or during the monsoon rains in Bombay, when there's a big monsoon cloud pouring water, can anyone make the cloud go away? This is the wealthiest, most powerful city in all of India. It's becoming a world power. So why don't we just press a button and make the clouds go away?
You cannot. There is only one thing that could dispel dense fog. The same thing that alone can dispel the clouds. The sun. You can't do it. I can't do it. The prime minister, the president, they can't do it. The scientists with all their technologies can't do it. Only the sun can dispel the fog and the clouds. So when the living entity falls under the foggy cloud of Maya, we have no power to be free from that ignorance. Therefore, the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, Daivihesu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam evamye prapadyante mayam etatirantite. This material nature, consisting of three modes of nature, it is impossible to overcome. Krishna says it is very difficult. But Prabhupada says it is impossible. It is impossible. But if we take shelter of Krishna, who is the Supreme Sun, by His mercy alone can we be freed from the fog of ignorance. The three modes of nature are constantly in conflict. Krishna tells in this verse that material nature is constituted of these three modes. Goodness, passion, ignorance. Sattva-guna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna. And just like in the scriptures, there are many, many historical stories of battles between the Suras and the Asuras. They may be historical wars, but they are also symbolic. Symbolic of the battle of the modes of nature. The Suras are the mode of goodness. They are empowered by the mode of goodness. And the Asuras are empowered by the modes of passion and ignorance. And this fight is going on. It is going on in the world, and it is going on in every person's heart. Material nature has been designed to keep us bound, birth after birth after birth, to keep us forgetful of our relationship with God. And the scriptures and the acharyas explain, although material nature, or Maya, is so intricate in all of her complex details, unfathomable. How long have scientists been researching material nature? And they're always discovering new powers, new energies. They're always discovering new explanations. It is endlessly mutable. And they'll be doing this for the rest of eternity. They'll never figure it out. It's impossible to figure it out. Why? Because the conditioned soul, with its tiny little brain, which is empowered by Maya herself, she's never going to reveal all her secrets. Never. Even Isaac Newton, one of the great scientists, he was getting all kinds of praise for his very, very in-depth understanding of how this universe is working. He was an honest man. He said, all I'm doing is on this vast ocean side, I'm just examining just a few grains of sand. How many grains of sand are in the banks of an ocean? That's the best anyone can do. But Krishna explains everything in principle. And if we simply understand the principles of how material nature works and why we are captivated by her energies. Then we can take shelter of the process of getting out. Srila Prabhupada, he instructed us that we should carefully study how material nature is working. And we should discuss it amongst each other. What is material life? Ishopanishad tells that we must carefully study and understand both spiritual and material nature. Because you can't get to spiritual nature unless you get out of material nature, and you can't get out of material nature unless you understand how. And you can't understand how unless you understand, at least in essence, how it works. Shall we discuss this today? Material nature is programmed. And every living entity under the clutches of material nature, within this fog, is programmed by Maya. Maituna Agara. The natural programming is magnetic attractions between opposites. The Acharyas quote this Maituna Agar, which means it is this attraction of the opposite sexes that is the sustaining force of illusory energy. It's the all-pervading power that keeps regenerating within material existence. And it's the all-powerful force of Maya that keeps one bound, birth after birth after birth, to material consciousness. Pungshastriyo maituni bhavametam tayormito hridaya krantimato. Atogrihakshetra sutapti vitaya janasya moho yamaham mameti. Our beloved Lord Rishabhdev have explained it like this. That the attraction between opposite sexes, between male and female, is the basic principle of material bondage. It is the most powerful energy that affects the mind and the senses. Now today, I would like to make some attempt to explain this in terms of the technologies that we are accustomed to within this 21st century of Kali Yuga. We'll use the analogy of a radio or a television. Because really, science and technology, its various limited, imperfect ways of trying to imitate the way material nature works. Yes? Really, what a computer is it's an imperfect way of trying to imitate God's creation of the brain. Yes? And actually everything that's being done as far as science and technology is just taking certain principles that are eternally existing within material nature and applying them in a gross physical way to try to exploit or control material nature to some extent. So, in a television, the set, really, it's just a piece of wood and steel and glass with all kinds of little things inside. What could it do? Unless there is an antenna transmitting energy, When the television tunes into that energy, then it creates images and sounds within the speakers as well as the screen. Yes? Really, whatever you're seeing is simply a manifestation that is localized, that is actually being generated by the powerhouse antenna that is transmitting it. Yes? And that one antenna can transmit an energy that is received through millions of television sets. But every station you turn to, you're tuning in to another energy wave. So material nature works very much like that. Maituna agar, this attraction of opposite sexes, it is being generated by Maya Shakti, all pervading, everywhere. And we're all like little receivers and antennas. Yes? An antenna can receive and an antenna can also transmit. That's really all it's about. Why we take it so seriously is really a mystical subject. It's not the flesh and the blood and the hair that you're attracted to. It's that, if you're a man, it's the female energy of Maya. If you're a woman, it's that male energy of Maya that's somehow or other being transmitted through that person's earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence. It's being transmitted by that person, that energy. And you can only be affected by it if you tune in. If you don't tune in, you're absolutely oblivious to it. Yes? I'll give an example. The lower species. There are the reptiles. Do you ever see a male reptile attracted to a female rat? I mean, they may want to eat each other, but they're not attracted to each other. You'll never even see a cockroach attracted to a caterpillar. How many thousands of species of insects? But no species has any attraction to another species, even within insect life. The reptiles are attracted only to the exact type of reptile that is their species. A little lizard is not attracted to a snake. And a fly is not attracted to a mosquito. And a rat is not attracted to a cat. They're almost the same size. Why? Do we ever think about that? Why are all species only attracted to the female or male energy of their own? Because according to their karma, the external energy has programmed them only to receive those signals. Yes? It's programmed. It's like there's Channel 4 in Bombay. Is there such a thing? Channel 4? So if you're programmed to Channel 4, you're not going to get any other stations. You can only get Channel 4. And there could be 108 other stations shooting their antenna transmissions right in your direction. But you'll only be able to tune into Channel 4 because your television is only programmed in that way. So although there is just unlimited living entities transmitting so much sexual energies in all directions, the little reptile can only tune in to Channel 4. Because its mind, by karma, is programmed only for that. Yes? But they're actually not attracted simply to the tail and to the lotus eyes and to the very, very supple tail of the opposite sex. They don't have the intellect to understand these things. It's simply that Maya Shakti, that energy of the Lord, Maituna Agar, that is being transmitted through that particular form, through that particular entity, and because the reptile is tuned in, it's affected, it's attracted. And that holds true with all species of life. Every species of life is simply programmed to receive the transmitted energies of their own species. Now, human life is very special because in this human form of life, we have free will. With our free will, every action, word, and thought adjusts our karmic programming. Yes? Because the lower species do not create karma. They're fixed in one station. There's no choices. They can't switch. Yes? But as a human being, because we have free will, we can adjust our karma. And karma programs us to be attracted and averse to various energies within the three modes. Now, we're all like antennas. We're all transmitting something. You don't even know what you're transmitting. Maya's doing it through you. You have certain choices of how you want her to let her do it or to what extent. But it's an energy beyond yourself. And according to a person's karma, we may have tremendous power. Just like there's little antennas on top of straw huts. At Radha Gopinath Temple, we have a radio station. Did you know that? At least we're supposed to. That's how when people listen with their little radios and put on their earphones doing yatras and sometimes in the temple, you can hear the lecture. But it's a very small antenna with very little power. It's electrical power. It can only go within maybe 100 or 200 meters. But then there's big, big antennas that can transmit all over Bombay. And then there's satellites, which are like antennas that can receive and transmit all over the world, and even in outer space. Yes? So karma, just like some of these Bollywood actors and actresses, they can transmit a lot of this energy, and they can attract millions of people. Yes? And then, no offense to people of India, but the Hollywood actors and actresses, some of them can transmit an even more powerful volume of that Maya Shakti to attract people's minds all over the place. But is it their energy? Are we really attracted to them? It's just that Maya Shakti, Maituna Agar, that potency to attract.
Now,
sometimes within human life, according to our karma, we could have different type of programming. That's why some people are gay or homosexual. They really just have absolutely no attraction to the opposite sex, but they have great attraction to the same. And many people are born like that. Now, from an objective point of view, what does it mean? Why? Karmically, they're simply programmed. They're receiving that attractive energy from the same sex. They're tuned into that station. Others are tuned into another station where they're receiving it from opposite. And then we have other kinds of karmas, like people who are attracted to little children. I mean, helplessly attracted. Now, to most people, this is absolutely impossible to even think of. But yet, why are people like that sometimes? Because they are karmically programmed by material nature to just be tuned in to that energy. And Ananda Mayobhya Shat, we're looking for pleasure. They're tuned in to the energy coming from that type of pleasure, from that type of species. Now, the most important thing to know in this analogy is what I'm about to speak. That what determines for a human being how to tune in and to what? The senses do not do that. The senses just like an antenna. The antenna is getting all the waves from all the stations. But it's the tuning device that is programmed to receive one. Yes? The tuning device is the mind. What your mind focuses on is what you're going to be tuned into. And what you're tuned into is what you're going to be affected by in life. Now, we use the example of the attraction between male and female potencies within this world. But it holds true with all material energies. Greed, pride, anger, envy, illusion, lust. Just like in advertising. For most people, if they just see something enough, they just tune into it, and then they want to buy it. They get attracted to it. If that wasn't the case, why are these companies spending so much money putting up these hoardings? Now, for a devotee, we look at the hoardings and say, so what? Who cares? At least, I hope we're thinking like that. But actually, why do they keep doing that? Because the common people, they see the hoarding, and because they're pleasure-seeking, they're fearing pain, they see the hoarding, and when they see it, Maya's energy just, they tune in. As soon as their mind becomes conscious of it, they become tuned into that energy, and they could become attracted. Why? For a good television show, you may have to spend a crore of rupees just to have a advertisement for 30 seconds. Yes? Why would one Why would a company want to spend a crore of rupees for 30 seconds on a show? And they're just showing all nonsense things. Because they know. They may not know it in terms of the foundational understanding of how material nature works, but they know it on a superficial level. That if we put something before a human being, they will tune into it. Tune in means you become conscious of it. You become aware of it. Your mind applies its attention to it. And when that happens, they're tuned in. You've got them. They're on your channel. And then what you're trying to attract them with goes through their mind right into their heart. Because they know that it works. They know it works because that's the way material nature runs. Hare Krishna. And they spend 1 crore of rupees, and they're going to probably make 50 crores of rupees. Because there's going to be so many millions and millions and millions of people who tuned into their product and their propaganda and are going to be attracted to spend their hard-earned money for it. Now, in political campaigns, how many people really know about what the politician has to say? Mostly intellectual people and a few others. Because in campaigns, they're just, you know, vote for Dilip Kumar. That's all anybody. They just see it everywhere. Every stoplight, every wall, every banner, they're just seeing his Dilip Kumar's face, and they're seeing vote Dilip Kumar. They spend crores and crores and crores of rupees just putting Dilip Kumar's face and name and telling everybody to vote. And that's how they win elections. It's not a matter. They're not saying, this is what Dilip Kumar says. Have you heard about his theory of how to reform the economy? No, it's just vote. Now, it seems really superficial and empty. Why would anyone vote for someone simply because you see their name all over the place? But if you don't have enough money to do that stuff, you lose the election. Yes? In America, when John Kerry and George Bush had their election, they were both spending so many tens and millions of dollars on their campaigns. And to actually disseminate their message doesn't cost that much. You know, they have debates on television. That doesn't cost all that much. But it's all, vote Kerry, vote Bush, vote Dilip Kumar. And people are just, somehow they get tuned in, and common people, when they're tuned in, they're attracted and they vote. So what you tune into is what you're going to be affected by. That is a law of nature. Or as we say within Vaishnav society, what you associate with, you become. Srila Prabhupada gave a simple example. If you put an iron rod in fire, due to its connection to the fire, it becomes red and hot like fire. If you put that same iron rod in ice, due to its association with ice, it becomes cold as ice. So association means simply what our mind is tuned into. It's not just a bodily thing. If we decide to tune our minds through our eyes to some object, then we'll either attraction or aversion. If we tune our mind to certain sounds, if we tune our mind into the sounds of secular cinema music, will develop an attraction for that. Human psychology. What I found amongst older people is they usually like the music of when they were young. They usually don't like it all, the modern stuff. But the young people, they can't tolerate the old stuff. They only like the modern stuff. Yes? Just like my father used to listen to his music. And when I was a little boy, I hated that stuff. And he hated the stuff I listened to. And I was thinking at that time, I'm not going to tell you what the music was, but I was thinking at that time, it's because he's just so old, like an old bamboo. He just doesn't get it. He's not with the times. But what I didn't understand is he was saying the same thing about my grandfather. And now when I meet my old friends, I see they're still listening to the same stuff they listened to as teenagers, and they can't stand what's going on now. Huh? Why? Because when you're young like that, you're very receptive, you tune into that type of music, you become attracted, you become attached, and that's what you're tuned into. That's what you like. That's the mind. Therefore, Krishna says in the 62nd verse of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Dhyayato Vishagan Pongsa Sangat Te Shubhajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodha Bijayate. This is the essence of everything. While contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment. From attachment, lust arises. From lust, when unfulfilled, it becomes anger. So everything about our life is based on what we contemplate. Contemplation is the mind's way of tuning in. It's the beginning of the whole cycle. Forgive me, but we're talking about the real world, so I may say things that are not so sophisticated. But let us say, when a man is in love with a woman, or a woman is in love with a man, their wife, husband and wife. Now, if they're faithful and chaste, if they're tuned into each other, if they tune into that energy coming through that person, then even when they're old, they're faithful and chaste to each other. They're not concerned with other people. Why is sometimes a man or a woman so obsessively attached to each other? There's so many other people who may be nicer looking. They may be better personalities. They may even get along better with them. But why such an obsession to one person? Because we've tuned in to that Maya Shakti through that person. The mind has tuned in. And in a civilized world, that's what Varnashram Dharma or civilized society is about. Keeping the mind tuned in such a way that we could be faithful, chaste, moral, and ethical in our lives. In the Vedic society, the way people dress, the type of music, the way people move, the way people talk, they're cultured to actually not unnecessarily transmit these agitating waves that are going to disturb others. But in a Western society, so much energy, the dress, the music, the mannerisms, and all these things is very specifically designed by Maya to transmit immense volumes of passionate energies to capture people's minds. Because when you see it, if you tune in, you become affected. If you smell it, if you hear it, if you taste it, when you tuned in, you become affected. The mind is transformed by that experience. So Krishna is saying, our whole direction in life is based on what we contemplate. Which means, in modern terminology, what we tune into. Or what station or channel we decide to put our mind on. Just like a television. If you contemplate the objects of the senses, it's like, with the mind, it's like bringing the energy through the antenna, and then what happens is the mind then transmits it and activates the senses. If the most beautiful object of the senses is right next to you, but you're just so busy that you don't even really look at it, are you affected? No. But if somebody else is looking and looking and still looking and still looking, every second you're looking, you're just tuning in deeper, 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 deeper. You'll be affected. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita says that for one who controls the mind is the best of friends. For one who is unable to control the mind is the worst enemy. Srimad Bhagavatam expands on that and explains that in all the 14 worlds, the only enemy the living entity could have is his or her own uncontrolled mind. If your mind is controlled, there's no enemies. We see so many great personalities, like Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu, he was seeing everything in terms of friend and enemy. And in the school of Shanda and Amarka, that's what they were teaching. How to conquer, plunder, and exploit your enemies, and how to exploit and utilize those who are your friends and enjoy with them. But for Prahlad, none of it made sense. Because he was seeing Krishna. He was seeing the spirit soul in everyone's heart. He was the perfect example of smaranam. He was always remembering Krishna. He was tuned in to Krishna exclusively. Ananya bhakti. Exclusive devotional service. He was so focused in Krishna, always hearing about him, chanting his names, remembering his beautiful pastimes, that everything in the world he saw was in relation to Krishna. Even the rakshasas that were trying to murder him, he loved them. And Haridas Thakur, he was in that spirit of Prahlad. Even the people who ordered him to die, even the people who tried to murder him in so many torturous ways, he loved those people. He did not see them as enemies. He was praying to Krishna, please forgive them. Don't let their hatred to me cause them pain. Because his mind was tuned in. His mind was always remembering Krishna. When we remember Krishna, when the mind engages the senses in devotional activities, the mind is the best friend. But the jivatma, like the ocean, beach, it's either the sea or the beach. It's never both at the same time. We're either with Krishna or with Maya. That is our moment-to-moment choice. And every time we make a choice, we are conditioning or programming our mind in that way. Every time we faithfully follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, where the programming of our mind toward pure devotional service is becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. We're developing a greater capacity to receive and transmit the internal spiritual potency. But every time our mind and senses are engaged in activities that divert our attention from away from Krishna, according to the three modes of material nature and how we're being diverted, we're programming our mind to receive those signals and be attracted to those signals. So the easiest way to be Krishna conscious is not to compromise. Maya's trick is compromise little by little, slowly, slowly. It may be the only way we know. But it's difficult. Because every time you compromise, it's like putting water on the fire. You're building a fire, you put water on the fire. You put some wood, then you put water. You put more wood and then more water. More wood, more water. The easiest way to get a fire to blaze is not to put water. It sounds simple, doesn't it? But it's not so simple in regard to Krishna consciousness. Every time we compromise, we're just tuning in and giving a deeper programming effect within our mind toward that object of sense gratification, either gross or subtle. And every time we fix our mind on Krishna, we're deepening that program to be receptive to the signal of Krishna's mercy. And that is why on initiation we take these four vows: no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. And we vow to chant the holy names of Krishna at least 16 rounds every day. This is, Prabhupada said, it's the basic minimum. We try to avoid tuning in to these sinful activities, because every time we do, we become polluted. Our receptivity to Krishna becomes less. If we avoid all these other stations and we really tune into Krishna, then our receptivity to His mercy, to His beauty, to His love becomes deeper and deeper and deeper. Just like today we have these satellites where you can transmit from Bombay and receive it in Los Angeles, California in a moment. Yes? Through satellite transmission. That's a very crude replication of what the mind can do. Because according to what we're tuned into, we could be tuned into an antenna that's 10,000 miles away, that's transmitting a vibration, and be completely affected by that. Yes? Just like if somebody loves their child or loves their wife or husband, just by tuning into them, even though they're 10,000 miles away, just by tuning in, thinking of, as soon as your mind focuses on your wife, all your affection or your anger. Right? It's immediately awakened. Now that is an effective satellite. That's how Maya works. She's way out of sight, but you can't keep her out of your mind. What's going on? You think it's just happening automatically? No, that energy of that person is just... it's right there. The mind is just receiving it. Or even objects. Maya can transmit through objects too. You're in Alaska and you're thinking about your new car in Bombay. Yes? You just focus your mind on it and immediately there's all kinds of experiences of attachment, worry. What if my husband is driving that car today? What? So many sensations and experience come, even though the object is thousands of miles away. And also desire. When you desire something, you're transmitting that desire, and it can affect people across the world. Yes? Usually if people want to attract each other, what they're trying to do is get that person to tune in. In America, we didn't have arranged marriages. Somehow or other, Krishna let me escape that whole system there. But the way things are done, it's not that they went to the marriage board and said, you know, I want to get married, can you help me? And then the marriage board uses nice Krishna conscious intelligence to try to make compatibilities and all that. The way it's done there, even in, what to speak of high school, even grade school, people know the science of how Maya works without knowing she's behind the scenes doing it. All you do, I saw so many of my friends go down in this way, where they just get a message. Mary likes you. And my friend comes to me and says, I hate Mary. She likes me, but I hate her. But then, you know, he's saying, I hate her. But in his mind, that mantra keeps repeating. Mary likes me. And then a few days later, I see my poor friend holding hands with Mary. I said to him, you know, I said, Bob, you know, what's going on? I thought you hated her. He said, well, I did. I said, well, what? Why did you change your mind? He said, I don't know. Because somehow or other by saying, you know, she likes you, she gets you to tune in. Yes? And then you tune in, and then when you tune in to the Maya Shakti that's being transmitted from that particular antenna. That's all it is an antenna. It's just earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence. It's just a mundane antenna. The spirit soul is just activating it, but we don't know anything about the soul. Bob was not like Atmatattva realized. He didn't even know Mary had a soul. But he loved Mary. Crazy. I was trying to figure it out. What is this? And everyone, it's like that. She loves you. Oh, I hate her. And they succumb. He loves you. And then the girl, oh. So that's... it's not just people. What we have to understand is people are all just instruments. In this material world, everyone is an instrument to try to implicate everyone else in Maya's orchestrated plan to keep us bound by materialistic desires. And how does it work? Krishna reveals it. Dhyayato vishayan pungsam. Somehow Maya gets you to contemplate. either through a cinema or through a person or through a message or through a hoarding or through whatever. She gets you to contemplate, and when you contemplate, you tune in. When you tune in, you contemplate, and then attraction, attachment, and everything else starts developing. Thus Krishna tells in Gita. Because we have this satellite effect, yes? I'll go back to the satellite effect. Maya is all pervading. And how one mind can connect to another mind within a moment. The mystic yogis, they know how to do this consciously. The rest of us, it's happening unconsciously. I met one mystic yogi. He could stop his heart from beating for as long as you tell him to do it. 30 minutes. And doctors would come with stethoscopes and check pulse. There was no pulse, no heartbeat, no breath. Exactly 30 minutes. How did he do it? I saw that same yogi, there was an article about 12 feet away from him. And he could just with his hand go like this, and the article started moving closer, closer, closer. He could change his temperature. Doctors, usually you're supposed to be 98.6. You want me to be 102? They put a thermometer and it was 102. Now, usually if you're 102, people are putting water bags on your head and doing all kinds of things. But all he did is just, and he was 98.6. And all these scientists were gathered, watching, and doctors. They were, how do you do this? He said, it's very simple. He said, the mind is like the hand, the body's like a glove. If you know how to control the mind, then all matter follows. That's what mystic cities are about. People, in the mystic yogic process, people can read each other's minds, they control another person's thinking. A person can create a prapti city, take things from a distant place and bring it, just dematerialize it and then rematerialize it. People could travel on the water, travel through the air, travel in the rays of the sun. How? Simply by control of the mind. They know how to tune in to those eight material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. They know how to tune in and manipulate it through mind. So the mind is very, very, very powerful. Therefore, Krishna tells in Gita, Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano navadiyate tarasya harati pragya vayur navam ivambasi. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the senses in which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. The problem's not the senses. The problem's the mind. Even one of the senses, if the mind focuses, we become tuned into that thing. When we become tuned into that thing, we become receptive to Maya's energy to take us away from Krishna through that particular experience. Yatato hyapikontaya purushasya vipaschata indriyani pramatini haranti prashabam mana. Krishna says the senses are so strong and impetuous, Arjuna, that they can carry away even of a person of discrimination who's trying to control them. But the sixth sense is the mind. If the mind is controlled, then the senses are compared to serpents with broken fangs. They can't do anything to you. Many examples that are commonly given. Vishwamitra Muni. He was such a great yogi. He had such mystic powers. But what did Menaka do? She just somehow or other, she made her ankle bells tinkle sweetly. And he opened his eyes. And he tuned in to the Menaka channel. Yes. And what happened when he tuned in? He became a regular viewer. And he bought that was everything that was advertised on that station. He got married, he got a house, and all that other stuff. Yes? What? He just tuned in? Sobari Muni, such a great yogi. It's hard enough for us to sit for 2 hours and chant 16 rounds. Yes? He was for months underwater in the Jamuna, fixed in meditation. But somehow or other, he tuned in to that energy, which somehow or other manifested through some fish. He wasn't attracted to the fish, but that energy somehow or other transmitted to his mind. He tuned his mind into that, and then he came out of the water and got married. Hare Krishna. Now, in classes today, the classic example is there. Ajamil. Ajamil was the most pious, well-brought-up Brahmin. His parents were so sattvic in every way. They were moral. They had great integrity. They were living by very pure, regulated principles. They worshiped the Lord. And they raised Ajamil in this spirit. He was performing puja. He was reading the Vedas. Ajamil was married to a very pious, chaste wife of a very similar disposition to his own. He was a Brahmin, brought up. It's not like a Brahmin living in Borivali, where there's all kinds of distractions. He was a Brahmin living in a very, very pure Brahminical community with a very pure Brahminical heritage. But somehow or other, Maya Shakti, the Bahiranga Shakti, she somehow or other got him to tune in, to just focus his attention on the prostitute and the very, very low sinful man that she was with. And because he tuned in, what happened to his consciousness? He became totally degraded. Jayato vishayan pung sangaste shubhajayate. He contemplated, and the energy that was transmitting from that particular source, the modes of nature, the modes of passion and ignorance that Maya was generating through that particular person's karma, just he made his mind conscious to it and became completely affected. That is Ajamil. But then we have the story of Haridas Thakur. Maya Devi herself came to his cave in Phuliagram. Now please understand, this is serious. This is really serious. Vishwamitra Muni, Sobari Muni, Ajamil, they were just getting that energy through little tiny antennas. Yes? Little antenna transmissions. Just little moving around antennas. That's what everybody is. But Maya Devi herself, the full-fledged powerhouse, full-fledged. And those little energies that are coming from antennas, each antenna is just radiating just, you know, little part and parcels of Maya's energy. But she appeared with her full power. And she focused all of her energy, Maya Shakti, on Haridas. Yes? For 3 nights, every night, all night. The sight, the sound, the smell, the taste, the touch. In full-fledged, Maya was manifesting. Why? He was not the slightest bit affected. Everybody in the world is being affected by her. Huh? And she's right in front of him, and he's not affected. In technological terminology, the reason is he was tuned into another station. That's all. What was the station he was tuned into? Haridas Thakur is certainly blessing all of you today. There is a story in the Greek mythology about the Trojan horse. It's a long story, but one lady, Helen, she was married to one of the great kings of the Greek Empire. But the prince of Troy, whose name is Paris, somehow or other, he tuned into her and she tuned into him. And she left her husband and went to Troy. Now, not only was that quite heartbreaking for her husband, but it was also a major insult. Because when you offend a ruler, you're offending the whole state. Just like if the Prime Minister of India goes to America or the President of America comes to India, as you receive the leader of the country, you're receiving the whole nation. You're actually, if you show respect, you're showing respect to the whole population of that country. And you show disrespect, it's the same. That's the way things are considered politically. So the Greek Empire decided to declare war on Troy. And they attacked. They really attacked with all their armies. But Troy had big walls around them. For 10 years, they battled and they couldn't get into the city. They failed. So what they did is they built this gigantic wooden horse. And they left it there. They left it outside the gates of the city. And then all the soldiers got on their boats and just sailed away in the ocean, in the sea. To make it very clear, we tried for 10 years. And in the process now, our greatest generals have been killed. Our greatest fighters have been killed. It's hopeless. Because actually that's what happened. I think Achilles, the best fighter they had, he was just killed. So we give up. We're gone. There's no use trying to fight anymore. So they left. Is that a good story? It gets better. They were thinking they're gone and there's this magnificent wooden carved horse outside. Let's take it. Now, two prophets, they both told the rulers of Troy, don't take it. Do not let that horse in your walls. Good advice was there. But they were thinking, the soldiers are gone, the horse is worth the fortune, it's very, very valuable, it's very beautiful. So they brought it in. And along with the horse, it was like the booty of the war, because everybody left. So this is the one thing that they got, very, very valuable material asset, was this horse. So they celebrated victory till late at night, then they all went to sleep. Now what happened is this. The best warriors that were left in the Greeks, they were inside the horse. Hare Krishna. Only a few of them. They were inside the horse. Secretly. Now obviously, a few people cannot battle the entire army of Troy. But when everyone is asleep, they were off guard. They won the war. They celebrated victory. They came out of the horse in the dark and opened up the gates. And the armies that went on the boats, they just went around to another place and came back. And in the middle of the night, they came in and they killed Paris, which is very nice. And they killed practically the entire civilization of Troy. They plundered it. They burned down the whole city. They killed almost everybody except Helen, the wife. They took her back. Now, how does this relate to today's lesson? We're warned in the Holy Scriptures. We're warned by the Vaishnav community. We're warned by all the previous acharyas not to let Maya in the fortress of our lives. But still, we think we're making nice advancement. We think that we're very stable and secure in our Krishna consciousness. How do we let that Trojan horse in? When we let the Trojan horse of Maya into our mind by tuning in. We tune in, we contemplate the objects of the senses, we start developing attractions. When that attraction starts contemplating, instead of somehow or other taking shelter of Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna's name, taking shelter of the devotees, we pursue in that way, then we're just letting Maya into the fortress of our lives. And once we let that Trojan horse into our mind, she's going to open the gates and she's going to allow through our gates a massive plundering of our devotional assets. So we must be very careful. Careful of what? To associate with people and places that help us to tune into Krishna. Actually, Kamadev has sharp arrows, but can't shoot an arrow till you tune into him. That's a fact. As soon as you tune in, the arrows start flying. If you don't tune in, Kamadev has no way of getting you. Unless we let them inside our mind and contemplate, Maya cannot touch us. For one who controls the mind is the best friend. But for one who fails to do so, the mind is the only enemy in all of creation. How do these terrorists work? They're just transmitting a horrible energy of the mode of ignorance. Yes? And they have their way of propaganda. And they're targeting people who have usually miserable lives, frustrated lives, either due to poverty or due to being failures in so many ways. And somehow or other, their propaganda is tuned in by that kind of person. And they start thinking, in this group, I could be a hero. My whole life, I've never been a hero. Nobody cares anything about me. But in this group, I could be a hero. And then you start listening to what they say, and even the most horrible philosophy makes sense. You tune into it, it makes sense, and you're willing to give your life for it. Hitler in Germany. The intellectuals were either killed by him or they left because they thought he was an insane, power-hungry madman. But what a transmitter he was to the modes of ignorance. What a transmitter. He was a real antenna. And he used other antennas. He built entire stadiums for 100,000 people only for one purpose, to hear him speak. Every radio, there was no television in those days. Every radio station in all of Germany was only allowed to play him speaking when he spoke. The intelligent people left. But the people who were in poverty, they had just lost the First World War. People who were frustrated because they lost all their national dignity in the face of the world. People who were just squandering and their lives were quite meaningless and hopeless. They tuned in to what he said. And because they tuned in to what he said, they believed everything he said. That's the power of the mind. The rest of the world thought he was a crazy, insane dictator. Because they weren't tuning into him. But the people of Germany, they tuned in. And they believed every word he said. And they were willing to fight wars on his word. That is how we are affected when we tune into somebody's energies. It's very powerful. What is Krishna consciousness? Krishna consciousness, in this type of terminology, simply means tuning in to Krishna's Hladini Shakti through the process of bhakti. Prahlad Maharaj describes the nine practices of devotional service. Sravana kirtana smarana bandana pada sevana dasyade pujana saki jana atmani vedana. The nine processes of devotional service are simply ways of tuning into Krishna. That's all. Tuning your mind into Krishna, which means remembering Krishna. How do we tune in? What you remember is what you tune into. What you contemplate is what you're tuned into. Bhakti is about keeping one's mind always on Krishna. That is why Kapila Dev has set up all the Vedic knowledge of all the scriptures throughout the whole creation for all times. All the rules, regulations, and instructions are meant to simply bring us to the conclusion. To always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. To be tuned into Krishna with our mind. It'll said, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Because Maya never rests. She does not work 9 to 5. She does not take Sundays off. And she doesn't put a sign outside of her office when there's a cricket champion game on television, saying, come back after 3 hours. Maya works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, 12 months in a year, 100 years in a century, 1,000 years in a millennium, and 311 trillion years in a day of, in a lifetime of Brahma. And she doesn't take even one nimesh, one wink of an eyelid off in the entire universal existence. And she has every living entity, all of her material elements are her transmitting antennas, transmitting her energies to divert our attention away from Krishna by attracting our pleasure-seeking nature. So Prabhupada said, if you're not in Krishna consciousness, you're in Maya consciousness. There's no in between. Tatastha Shakti. Every moment it's like that. Either we're the sea or we're the beach. That's our choice. So these are the 9 processes of devotional service. To understand the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Krishna has provided such wonderful opportunities to remember him. Through hearing, we can attain the ultimate perfection of going back to Godhead in this very life. Awaken ecstatic love of Krishna. Awaken an eternal state of consciousness beyond all the dualities of material life. Simply by absorbing ourselves in hearing Krishna's message. Now, Maharaj Parikshit, he could sit for 7 days, all day, every day, absorbed in hearing. Many of us cannot do that. Just my little lecture today, I'm sure many of you are very eager for me to end. And actually, I don't blame you, because if I was in your position, I would probably be thinking the same thing. It's very difficult for most people to just hear all day. But you should understand, this process of hearing is so powerful. It's a wonderful, enjoyable way to fix your absorption of the mind on Krishna. That is why every day we have Srimad Bhagavatam class. And in many temples every evening they have Bhagavad Gita classes. And Prabhupada gave us his books. And he wanted us to read his books with great absorption. Because in doing so, we tune into Krishna. We tune into Hladini Shakti. We tune into Srimati Radharani's blessing. And chanting. We chant in kirtan. We chant in bhajan. We chant on our japa mala, a prescribed number of rounds every day. What is the purpose of chanting? Simply to tune into Krishna. To focus the mind's conscious on Krishna. To absorb, to the degree you're absorbed in Krishna, to that degree, you're reprogramming, channeling your mind to love Krishna. Smaranam, remembering Krishna. Deity worship. Archanam, such a powerful form of the Lord's mercy. Why? The Lord is living in the spiritual world, enjoying with Srimati Radharani eternally. But he comes in the form of the Archamurti so that we can absorb our minds. When we're serving the deity with our hands, with our eyes, with our nose, with our mouth, when we're serving the deity with our senses, naturally our mind is focused. And by that focusing our mind on Krishna in the beautiful form of the deity. Krishna is the deity. Anywhere you go in the world, When you're chanting your rounds, when you're riding on a train, when you're walking down the street, when you're trying to deal with your family matters in the office or whatever, if you just remember the beautiful form of the deity, you're tuned into Krishna. You're tuned into the Hladini Shakti, to the internal spiritual energy of the Lord. Offering prayers, making friends with the Lord, surrendering everything to the Lord. The whole process of bhakti is simply different ways of focusing our full attention on Krishna. And that is what sadhana is really about. Real sadhana is about absorbing the mind. Our sadhana should not be mechanical. When we're doing deity worship, either in the temple or at home, when we're chanting the holy names in kirtan, bhajan, or japa, when we're reading the holy books, or we're giving class, or hearing the class, when we're rendering services, sevanam, pada sevanam, either personally serving the Lord or his devotees, or executing the order of the Lord through service, we should be absorbed. That is the supreme meditation. The gopis are the topmost of all transcendentalists. Why? Whether they're singing, hearing, making garlands, dancing, whatever they were doing, they were absorbed in remembering Krishna. Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna, to contemplate Krishna, to remember Krishna, to be absorbed in serving Krishna. Then we're, by doing so, we are consciously taking shelter of the internal potency. Taking shelter of the Lord is not just about getting up in the morning and saying, "My Lord, I'm yours." Taking shelter of the Lord means making the moment-to-moment conscious choice of engaging our senses and our mind in Krishna's service. That's what taking shelter is about. And Krishna is all attractive. Rupa Goswami warned us, if you're attached to all these material things, your home, your society, all your family stuff, don't go to Keshigat. Because if you go to Keshigat, Govinda will be standing in his threefold bending form, playing on his flute with a peacock feather decorating his beautiful flowing hair. He has his Vajayanti mala ornamenting his form, which is like a newly formed monsoon rain cloud. His nose is like the sesame flower, and his lips are like the ripe bimba fruit. His neck is like a conch shell with three splendid lines. Lakshmi or Sri Devi, and as a golden thread is decorating his beautiful chest. When you see Krishna, when you tune into Krishna, when you focus your consciousness on Krishna, then as Hari, he steals your heart, steals your mind. That is the goal of life. To be so absorbed in Krishna that as Hari, he steals our minds. And we chant the name Hare, Srimati Radharani's holy name, because she is so powerful. As the Hladini Shakti of the Lord, she steals the mind of Krishna. Krishna is Madan Mohan. He conquers Kamadev, who conquers the entire creation. But Radharani is Madan Mohan Mohini. She conquers the conqueror of Kamadev. How? By her love. by her selfless, supreme, ecstatic service. So what is the Krishna consciousness movement? It is consciously putting our lives at the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. It is assisting her through the servant of the servant of her servants in her loving service to Krishna. It's actually opening our hearts through our minds to receive the transmitted energy of Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna and to be carried by that love to the lotus feet of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told the pandits in Udupi that the greatest goal of life is love of Krishna, and the way to attain it is by following the 9 processes of devotional service. And when Lord Chaitanya was asked by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, of these 9 processes, which is most powerful? Lord Chaitanya told the world through Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that there is no other way in this age of Kali to perfectly be in tune with that bhakti shakti and awaken that natural ecstatic attraction to Krishna than the chanting of the holy names. Because Krishna has appeared in this age of Kali, and for those who absorb themselves in Krishna's name, Krishna's form, his pastimes, his qualities, his abode, his devotees, his mercy, everything is manifested within his name. Harinama, harinama, harinama eva kevalam kalonasteva nasteva nasteva gatir anyata. There's no need for anything else. All the other spiritual practices we do are to cultivate a proper consciousness to take the holy name. Unless we have a really serious, humble service attitude, we cannot absorb ourselves in the holy name. Why? Because Krishna is not pleased with us. Krishna will help us to overcome all obstacles if we have this humble service attitude, if we have proper determination, if we take proper association, and we really sincerely strive to absorb ourselves in chanting Krishna Nam. Association of devotees is most important. Rupa Goswami has instructed us in the whole science of bhakti, but he has told that without the association of proper devotees, we simply cannot perform the process of bhakti. Because every sincere devotee is transmitting Krishna. Yes? Now in this world, everybody out there is transmitting their particular mentality, their passions, their aversions, their anarthas. Yes? And everywhere we go, if we tune in, we're affected. If we're not tuned in, we're not affected. But we have to tune into something. We're not dead wood. We have to tune into something. That is why there is nothing more precious in all of creation than the opportunity to associate with devotees. Because they're transmitting Krishna. And the more advanced, the more pure a devotee is, the more dedication, the more they have a power to transmit greater volumes of Krishna's mercy. when we do Nam Sankirtan, what a experience it is. In a few minutes, there's almost 2,000 devotees here. And everyone will have their arms up. Actually, Chaitanya Bhagavat explains that when devotees in kirtan, they raise their arms while chanting, their arms are like antennas. Doesn't say antenna, but more or less it does. It says when they raise their arms to chant, the energy of the kirtan just emanates from their arms and goes through the atmosphere to the whole universe. Hare Krishna. So you're all antennas. Instruments transmitting Krishna's glories. And when thousands of people come together and raise their arms, and with their minds fixed on the holy name, in loving service to one another, Krishna is so pleased that how he purifies all of our hearts individually, collectively, and the energy spreads through the whole creation. That is the glory of Harinam Sankirtan. Now when Mayavadis do kirtan, they're emanating another energy. That kirtan may be able to elevate you to the Brahma Jyoti. But Vaishnava's kirtan, Golokera Premadari Dana Harinam Sankirtan, it's coming from Goloka and it's going to Goloka. And it takes everybody with it. So please understand the power of material nature, the nature of the mind, how Maya Shakti is working, and how by his inconceivable mercy within this world, Srimati Radharani, through her Vladini Shakti, through her Bhakti Shakti, is always available to lift us up and bring us to Goloka Vrindavan. And how at every moment we have the choice what we focus our mind on, what we absorb ourselves in. Life is short, but we have been given the highest benediction in this Harinam Sankirtan movement. It is Lord Chaitanya's movement. Krishna, experiencing the taste of Radharani's love and distributing it to the world through the process that he has given us. And especially through the association of devotees who has made this process their lives and souls. Let us rejoice. Our good fortune. Nothing more blissful. No matter what our physical state, no matter what our occupational state, these things are all relative, temporary changes. But we should rejoice every day for having the rare, precious fortune of being in the association of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya's devotees, where we could come together to serve one another and take prasad. Prasad is Krishna's energy. Prasad is the internal spiritual energy. It's the antaranga shakti permeating prasad. How wonderful. When we absorb ourselves in eating prasad, we're connected to the spiritual energy of the Lord. The Lord is so kind in so many ways to deliver us from Maya's clutches. So let us be happy, happy and grateful always that we have Krishna's prasad. We have Krishna's deity. We have Srimad Bhagavatam. We have the holy name. And we have the association of devotees who are transmitting all these blessings and permeating my life with that blessing. And let us be grateful to His divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, because He surrendered His life to be such an instrument of Krishna by which we have received everything precious and valuable within the spiritual world. Thank you very much.